Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. And the book that I'm reviewing today, I just finished yesterday, so it's kind of good to get a book reviewed while it's still fresh in my mind again. And the book that I'm reviewing is called Updraft by Fran Wilde. And this was, I think it was nominated for some awards yesterday. Let's have a look on Wikipedia. I have it here. Nebula Award, 2016 Nebula Award nominee. So I guess it was, making waves in 2015. And a few people recommended it. I know it came up on some other podcasts I was listening to, now that I think about it, probably because it was a Nebula Award nominee as well. And and it's been on my to-read list. It suddenly, finally came up. And I thought, well, let's get to it. So this is a book which is, I guess you could call it, a fantasy dystopian, probably young adult book, even though it probably doesn't say that. When I was looking here on the Goodreads page, it doesn't say that it was it's sort of like a young adult, but it feels very much like that, because it just tells that same story of a young character, teenage character, kind of becoming an adult and, being thrown into conspiracies and other things like that. So that's what we have here. So to start off with, what makes this book stand out, I guess, from most fantasy series is that it is it's set in what's called the Bone Universe. And it actually says here, I looked on Goodreads, it says Updraft is Bone Universe book number one. And then last year, I think, published 2016, came out Cloudbound, Bone Universe number two. And Horizon, expected publication date 2017, is Bone Universe number three. So why is this Bone Universe a Bone Universe? It's because people live in these bone towers made of bone, but they're not made of bone. They are kind of grown out of bone. And as the towers grow upwards, or grow upwards and outwards. There's sort of like these capsules in there that people fashion into homes. And as they keep growing, the capsules where people can live in these towers, these rooms in these towers, kind of disappear. And those rooms get smaller and smaller and smaller. So they're just kind of like these little nooks and crannies on the edge of these bone spires that stick up, bone towers that stick up out of these clouds. And people live on these towers. Some of them are connected by bridges, but the way that most people get between different towers is by flying. And the way that they fly is with these kind of hang glider. It's a bit weird, actually, because on the front cover of the books, and also the cover image on Audible, on the audiobook there, is someone with a kind of very oldie, like almost like a steampunky 1930s style of what you would imagine a hang glider to look like, including sort of like the triangular frame that you kind of hold onto and your body hangs between, and these kind of big wooden frames and almost kind of like these canvas looking things, and someone with goggles on and around flying between these towers. That is not really what the book looks like. If you just read the book and say, describe what these wings would look like, it feels very much more magical, kind of like silk wings. I wouldn't say magical, but it's never really explained. Like, the people fly with these wings in a way which feels a lot more like we just put on these wing costumes and we have these big silken, like, not angel wings, not bat wings, but some kind of wings that we can put our arms into and can control. But then sometimes we, like, it's sort of like a fine control that our fingers are controlling the wingtip somehow. Again, it's kind of like the front cover kind of, I had to kind of fight against what the front cover of the book told me as I was reading it, because it really felt like it was a lot more magical, because so much of the book is sort of like when it comes to the flying, it's sort of like, yes, and I put on my wings and I did this and I did that. And it feels like it's written by someone who has never been hang gliding or never been paragliding. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just sort of like what you think you know about winged flight. In our world, you kind of got to forget that, and you've got to imagine that when people put these wings on, they kind of become birds. They can gain altitude and lose altitude and swoop and fly in a way which feels a lot more bird-like than it does like 1930s looking hang glider, fantasy steampunk hang glider that it is on the front cover of the book. So So that's what you have. So what we have is this city made of bone towers sticking out above some clouds. And there's in the center of the city is the spire, which is a much, much bigger, like different style of bone tower, while the other bone towers kind of have like the rooms around the outside, and they're all kind of like lots of kind of balconies and nooks and crannies that people live on around the outside of the towers with the normal bones. It feels like the spire is kind of inward looking. It's like so it's got a hollow inside and very smooth and shiny on the outside, and there's a few windows that you can fly in, but otherwise it's got this hollow column in the middle of the spire, and you can fly around inside the hollow column. So the spire. The single spire at the center of the city, where the kind of government is based, the singers they're called, are based, that is kind of smooth around the outside and much, much, much larger than the other towers. So, on the face of it, this sounds like, hey, this is great. You know, I'm sure this is, you know, this is pretty much all I heard about when I, you know, when I heard about this book. Oh, it's about flying around between different bone towers sticking above clouds and people flying around with these gliders, these wingsuits, flying around. And I'm like, okay, this could be absolutely amazing world building. And I do, when I was scrolling quickly through down some of these reviews on Goodreads, it's sort of like, oh, this is amazing world building. The world Lindsay rated it 4 stars. Here's a friend review. 4 stars. The world building is the star here. A bewildering array of bizarre cultural, biological, and physical features in this world. But then he says, however, I don't quite think it stands up to scrutiny. And this is my biggest problem with what could be amazing world building. You've got these towers that are made out of bone and people flying around between them. Why wasn't this just amazing? And I understand that there's these, like, the idea of where you have like a science fiction or fantasy world, which has got one major conceit, sort of like, you know, just even with like going back to Dune, you've got like, okay, it's a desert world. And now what falls out? What adventure can we have in a desert world with, you know, magical worm creatures or big worm creatures underground? Like what adventure, what unique adventure, what unique storytelling can be told in that world? Or maybe like the Wool series, the Silo series. Okay, everyone lives down underground and nobody can ever go above it. So you got this big tower underground. I mean, a lot of these have been done in many different ways, but you kind of go, okay, there's a major conceit. There's a major kind of premise of the world building, a major central factor. What can be done in this world? How can it be explored that this world is going to be different from other worlds in a way that we can tell a new story based on this? The problem with this updraft is that you've got these bone towers and you've got these different monsters. They've got the sky mouths that come out and terrorize people. But there was never a moment where something in this book happened where I was like, wow, that is unique. That couldn't have happened. Of course, there's like flying scenes, but I kind of read flying scenes. And there's, you know, different things. Oh, these people there and there's these monsters are here and these monsters are terrorizing these people. But are the monsters really what they see? And there's a government over here, but is the government really what it is? And there's this thing happening here and I'm a persecuted teenager not being able to make it in the world but I'm, you know, blessed with this power, but not really able to, you know, all these different things. Never felt like this kind of paid off any of the world building. Sure, there was a bit of flying around, but it never really went anywhere. And then the world building kind of stopped at, like if someone said to you, like, hey, here's the cover of the book, bone towers, people with hang gliders flying around, wouldn't that be cool? And you'd be like, yeah, that would be cool. Now tell me, like, or within the story, explore what it is really like to live here. But it kind of does that, but it kicks the story off so quickly and kicks off with this main character, Kirit, so quickly that we never really kind of establish the rules of them, rules of the world. So as we're going through the book, it's saying, oh, and this is happening, and that is happening, and this is happening. And I'm just like, but how are these, like, if they're above the clouds? I mean, there's just kind of like one of those really obvious questions. It's sort of like, okay, this is a dystopian society. What's it like to live here? Where do they get their food from? At some point it goes, oh, those southern towers, they have apples and they deliver the apples from the southern towers. And I'm like, wait, now there's apple trees? That wasn't really made clear, because I thought, you know, where do they get the water from? And then I was thinking, yeah, where do they get the water from? And then they're like, oh, and suddenly I had goose meat. And I'm like, geese? Now we have geese here. Where, you know, geese, they live with water and they eat grass. And like, what are you feeding the geese? Or maybe they're kept in pens, but they must have their wings clipped so then they can't fly. fly, but do the geese fly around? We haven't heard of geese so far. Like, where are the birds? What is happening here? Where do the birds only settle on the towers? But these bone spires, these bone towers, feel like it's really barren and it's really difficult to live there. And not many people live there. And suddenly it's sort of like, oh, now these thousands of people, these hundreds of people suddenly come out near the end. And I'm like, where did all those people come from? It felt like every tower only had like 20 people in it. And it's like this subsistence level of... But I never really felt like that's what the story was about. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like, where do they get the water? Where do they get the food? How difficult it is to live there? Suddenly there's traders and makers and hunters. And I'm like, well, what are they hunting? They have to hunt food. What are they hunting? And it's sort of like, are they just hunting the sky mouths or what other? And it became frustrating that the plot was so interested in the move Kirit story forward, conspiracy theory, government, blah, blah, oppression story, that the actual world building fell apart. And it was just unsatisfying for me to go, well, what is going on with this world here? Again, on the surface of it, I'm like, wow, this is really cool. This is people living in spires. Why don't people go down below the clouds? Are the clouds poisonous? What's down there? Why are they? And then I'm thinking, well, are the clouds up above to give rain? But no, that where would that come from? Like, at some point there'd be a weather system, and would the weather blow away the clouds down below? Or is there no weather system? Or like, there was never an idea that there's any weather or any reason why the clouds below wouldn't somehow be blown away. And now I looked at the list of the other books in this Bone universe, Cloudbound. I'm like, oh, okay, second book, they're going to go down below the cloud. And then I realized this world only works, and this government, this oppressive government, can only really exist in a world where everybody is totally incurious. Like, what's over there? No, don't look over there. Why not? Well, it's tradition that we don't look over there. Okay. What's down there? No need to check what's down there. Okay, this tower has crumbled. Let's go and have a look at this tower that's crumbled. No, we don't go and look at a tower that's crumbled. Why not? Because we don't. Why not? Because it's dangerous, I guess. And it just seems to go against everything that I ever think about humans and human curiosity. The only way that the world can keep working is that the people in the world are totally incurious, or they're told to be incurious, but then they don't go and look at a collapsed tower, and it just happens to be outfitted with all this valuable stuff. And I'm like, this is a scarcity-based society where everyone is having to eke out a living, and a tower falls down, but they don't just go over there and completely ransack everything that could possibly be in it. And at one point they're going, oh, let's go and help this person clear up. Oh, your room is untidy. This is like the opening of the book. Let's just throw everything over the side. This, oh, you don't need that. Let's throw it over the side. Let's get rid of that. Gets rid of that. And I was thinking, but everything has to come from the tower. Why aren't you just saving everything? Why isn't everything being moved from the bottom of the towers up to the top of the towers to help the people at the top of the towers to get through? And yeah, it's just one of those weird things where I was just like, it just doesn't add up. This is a scarcity-based society, but everybody is treating it as though, oh, we can just do this, or I'll just get rid of that, we can throw this away, oh, leave that over there. Again, it never really made sense. Which brings me on to the missed opportunity, one of the main missed opportunities. No matter what the story, there is a story that I thought would be told here. And a world building that I thought would arrive, and it wasn't about the world building. And then I thought, okay, well, it has to be about the story. What's it like to be someone living in this city where you can fly between different places? And the book starts off with someone on a tower, and there's a monster attack, and it doesn't matter what happened with that. Suddenly, she isn't allowed to fly, and isn't allowed to do this. And she's like, okay, go down and help clear up this person, you've got to just go and do some busy work, some community service work. Just go down there, you broke a rule, go down and help this person do it. So, like, the whole start of the book, I'm like, okay, when are we going to get to fly? When are we going to get to fly? They're going to do some flying around this thing, and it's going to be amazing. Because what is the dream, the human dream? We've looked to the stars, we've looked at the birds for, you know, millennium, thinking, wow, what would it be like to fly? And then, in this book, suddenly we're going to have that chance. What will it be like to fly? And the first thing that happens is, no, you don't get to fly, you got to do this. Okay, now you're going to fly. Okay, now you're going to fly for the first time. What's it going to be like? Is it going to be this unbounded flight to the horizon? You're going to fly up and things. There's this book, I can't remember what it was called, but there's this book which is based around everybody has these devices which you can fly. Everyone can just fly around. I can't remember what it's called. And the book opens with someone saying, I wonder how high I can fly. And he's like, okay, if I get this battery and this battery and this battery, and then I throw away the batteries as I go even higher, I'm not allowed to throw the batteries away because you can't throw stuff down because it's so dangerous. And I can't remember exactly what the full story was, but it was about somebody who was like, I'm going to see how high I can possibly fly with this thing. And it was a great opening to a story about a world where everyone can fly, and I'd be like, this is going to be it. This is what Updraft is going to be. It's going to be about, like, someone who is unbounded. You can do everything in three dimensions and fly around here. But the first flight that we get, which is disappointingly far into the book, is just a driving test. It's sort of like, oh, to be able to fly around the city in the future, everybody has to pass a test, and this test happens twice a year or something, so let's get together, everyone. And I'm like, this is so... Why do I have to have the first flight of this person being their driving test? Like, the way that you tell a story about somebody who is learning how to drive is that they've already done the driving test, and then their parents give them their car, and they're like, woohoo, I've got my first car, and now I can go out, and I'm free, I've passed into adulthood, and I have free, unlimited, the highway is my adventure. You don't start off with somebody waiting to do the driving test and then doing the driving test and do it. You start that story at the end of the driving test and then somebody being given their wings or giving their car and giving handed over the car keys. That's the way it works. And here, that doesn't happen. And it's kind of so disappointing that the first thing that happens is someone takes their driving test, takes their flying test, fails, and then is like, yeah, and now you can't do that. And that kind of kicks the story into gear. But it wasn't the flying, there wasn't the unbounded flying that I wanted to. And later on there's flying, but it's inside the spire and it's all bound. And then, so what I was wanting just wasn't there at all. I never really got a feeling of what it's like to be living in a world where everyone has to fly around between different spires. It's sort of like, at one point it's like, oh, you've got to do this journey, but there's these waypoints and that kind of stuff, and you've got to fly from here to there. Really disappointing. Not what I was expecting from a book where someone's on a hang glider flying around on the front of the book. What's next in my notes here? What's my notes? Are the clouds above the clouds? Are the clouds below poisonous? Never really done. So, okay, so let's talk about the characters. Oh, but it's kind of not even worth talking about the characters, because there's Kirit Densira, and Densira is the tower that they come from. That's kind of, people take the second name from the towers that they live in. And Kirit is our main character, and she is so great. And why is she so great? Because she's always good. Her character flaws is that sometimes she, you know, she does so much what's best for other people, that's the thing that brings her down. And it's kind of like, and this is what made me think, oh, this is definitely young adult science fiction, young adult fantasy, which I didn't realize that that's what this book was. But as soon as you get a character who's like a late teenager who was just so special and just so great, her one flaw is that, you know, her singing voice isn't that great and stuff. But anyway, it's discovered that she's got this innate talent. She is the chosen one. She's got this unearned ability, surprising ability, that she can control these sky mouths. The sky mouths are these kind of invisible squid things, and they're called sky mouths because you can only see them when they open the mouths, and then you can only see the inside of the mouth, so it looks like these mouths just open up in the sky. And she's got a way that she can sing. This is not a spoiler. This happens like right in the first few pages of the book. She can sing in a way, she can use her voice in a way that can control or repel or kind of stop the attack of this sky mouth. And she thinks, oh, this is going to be great because then I have this ability and it's going to help me out. But it turns out people who have this ability have to go become singers. It's called singing. And she kind of says, oh, well, you kind of got to go, you're not allowed to use this uncontrolled. You've got to be trained up in this way. You can kind of come over to the spire and become a singer. And she's like, I don't want to be a singer. She wants to be a trader. But, you know, she's manipulated by different people, and it turns out she has to become a singer. So the story is then her training to become a singer, and the singers are kind of like this shadowy government, and there's lots of secrets. And what happens is then, unfortunately, is that she is constantly just in the right place, and she's being manipulated by people, and she sometimes gets information from her by herself, but a lot of the time she's just being like given information by other people, and other people say, oh, well, you'll need to know this. And other people say, well, if you do this. So it's one of those really disappointing stories in that somebody just happens to be talented. Well, not even talented. Someone just is like really is the chosen one. That's what it comes down to. Chosen one has a talent, is brought into different circles, happens to be in the right place. And then at the end of the book, again, mild spoilers, that this oppressive government, this with all these different conspiracies, different layers of conspiracies, is kind of overthrown, or there's an overthrow attempt at the end of the book. Let me put it that way. And it felt totally unearned. That why is this Kirrit's story? There's other characters in this book. There's Wick and there's other people hanging around. And I'm like, those people have been working for years and years and years and years and years to do this. Years and years and years to overthrow this government. Years and years to get freedom to people. And there's whole different factions within the Spire working against each other. And we, you know, there's no reason for me to go into detail about that. But it's sort of like, well, why do we have the story of the teenage girl who's just so special and got this certain talent? She just comes in and sure, she is like doing things to help them along a bit, but I'm like, this isn't really her story. And it always annoys me when you get a story which isn't somebody's story and they're just kind of following along in the footsteps of other people, finding out what they, and then at the end it's sort of like she's like, oh, now she's going to become a figurehead or a leader in this new, in this new world, in this new faction that grows. And I'm just like, sorry, you didn't really earn it. And Kirrit wasn't really satisfying for me as a character, and unfortunately I can't really see this character being interesting even if this was a young adult novel. It's like, didn't we read The Hunger Games? Like, didn't we read, like, this is, what was her name? This is Kirrit, but then it's like Kirrit, but it isn't Katniss. It's sort of like, it's almost too, like, why are we, like, someone else who's in the right time at the right place and becomes a figurehead and is used by even people. It's like, I've just read this book before in a dystopian world where people are hungry and have to do this thing and go to the capital. And of course, this isn't The Hunger Games, but I like, but it isn't anything that takes it apart from other young adult fiction where somebody does become a figurehead and help lead a thing. And I'm just like, yeah, well, this is, if you want to say Dune is that, that's this. If you want all these different stories, I'm just like, it's just a somebody chosen one person who is, you know, who happens to have the right parents who, you know, in a secret backstory that they only find out as they go through the book and they find out who the relations are and who's been working against. Well, it's a bit of a pity that that was the person whose story we're told. Again, there could have been an amazing story told in this thing. Which brings me to this whole issue of what the story is about. There's a conspiracy. Sure, it's fine that there can be a conspiracy. There's different layers of people. This is what happens in a dystopian based on scarcity. You know, in like The Silo, it's sort of like, this first story in Wool is this, and then we find out this, and then you keep pulling it back, and then this, and then there's another layer of government here, and then over in this place it's actually being controlled here, and there's different rules, and it's being revealed here. Like, that is a, you can tell a story like that, but it's kind of needs to be told over a long time. Like, it felt a bit weird that this is like an audiobook, which is like 11 hours of audiobook. It just rushes through this. It's sort of like, what? Oh, it doesn't. It never says how.
This is
oops, didn't mean to press that. It's weird that, like, in a book which is so short, it spends not really enough time building up the world and then knocking it all down. And this is a real pity, because it could be interesting world building. Setting, this is a great setting, and a weird government in a dystopian future, you need to build that up. It's too easy to knock it down. I mean, there's a book that I reviewed, which is all about the world building, almost to a fault it's about the world building, and I had a different issue with this, is that in China Miéville's The City and the City, it's about, you know, about the way, I don't need to go into it, about the world building. I had a similar complaint there where it kind of, it was like a secondhand story that somebody else had already gone through and discovered all of the different conspiracies and the different things, you know, the different ways that the world works. And then we find somebody else going through this. But it was a big chunky book. And at the end, it was always world building. It was like, and here is the next thing, and here is the next thing. And spoilers for that book, that you think it's going to be about the overthrow of the government, but in the end, the main character ends up working for the government, going, ah, now I understand there's all these different rules behind it. Not a flawless book, but it was interesting storytelling, in that the idea was that it was building up this world. The world was being created, and this person was going through it, discovering the rules, and as you went through it, the rules were being discovered. in this book, it felt like this conspiracy after conspiracy after conspiracy. It was just these layers upon layers, but not layers deep, but kind of layers stacked on top of each other. Instead of like discovering like a foundation below the other rules and the conspiracies and the different traditions and why do we do this? Oh, we do this because of this. And why? Oh, because there's this secret thing here. Again, I'm not going to go into them. But it felt like everything that we've discovered wasn't a next layer deeper into a world. It was sort of like another stupid thing stacked on top of itself. So in the end, I was like, this can't make sense. All of these different things is just going to crumble. And that this is the story about this big edifice of stupidity, incuriosity, manipulation, and just these layers of different things. And even within this government, in the Spire, there's different factions fighting against each other. It's just like, oh, we just need this last thing to topple it over, and all these different people. And that Kirit comes in and kind of knocks it all down. It's sort of like, it's too easy to build a conspiracy which is poised for destruction, which is poised to just collapse in on itself and drop apart. It's too easy for that to then just come along and go, oh, and I'm the hero for knocking this down in the end. My name's Kirit. Yay, go me. I'm just like, no, it wasn't good enough world building in despite the towers and the flying and stuff, which is what I thought this would be about. Even the world building of the different layers of conspiracy and the different government control and all that kind of stuff, that just wasn't good enough to hold itself together beyond even the most cursory curiosity and cursory prodding at this thing. Of course it's all going to fall down. There was no way to finish this book. Once you actually learnt about all the different layers, there's no way to finish this book which isn't just the whole thing just collapsing around in on itself. And of course that is what happens at the end of the book. The whole thing just kind of collapses in on itself. It's too easy not to do world building, but to do world destruction if you're having a dystopian world. It's much easier, or put it this way, it's much more satisfying for me to read different layers of conspiracy in world building and understand why those exist, and they exist for good reason. And there's a real quandary in the heart of the people rebelling against this system, thinking, ah, we could knock this system down, but this system has evolved over all these times to be the only way that we can live in this, you know, with scarce resources in this dystopian future. Or if there's a reason why there has to be some reasons why all this existed. And I got to the end of the book and I was like, okay, the big bad guy seems to be just wanting power, and he wants power for power's sake, and he's terrorizing the different towers in this way because, well, whatever, he just does it. And there was never, it never felt like there was a reason. I was like, okay, if these sky mouths are so easy to control, why aren't we farming? Like, it just makes more sense to farm them or to do this with them. Or if there's all these different, if suddenly we have geese and apples, why aren't we concentrating on that? It never really felt like there was any reason behind the conspiracies as we went deeper and deeper into them. And the characters who were loyal to that conspiracy, it felt like they were not loyal to any thing. They are only loyal to power in a way which is so dissatisfying, because it's then so easy to say, oh, well, the people who are just lusting after power, they fail, and the people who don't want power, they just want what's best for everybody else, they can win out in the end. Yay, everyone! But there seemed to be, maybe in the next book, we're going to find out why that was all needed to be that way. And it's sort of like, oh, shit, we needed this to happen because it needed to be this way, because if this didn't happen, something... But it never felt like within this book that any of that was addressed. So world building, it's too easy to do world destruction. World building is harder than just having a cool setting. There needs to be politics that make sense. And if there's going to be conspiracies, there needs to be conspiracies that make sense. There needs to be something outside of the thing which is a threat, which makes me think that the things that are happening for a reason, rather than just, that's just the way we do it. So much of this was kind of waved away. Why do we do this? Oh, it's tradition. Why is it tradition? It's obviously not the best thing to do this, to keep killing people. Of course, if there's too many people and we can keep killing people, but then their bodies are just thrown away and all the resources are just thrown away. It's like, no, the way that you have fewer people if there's not enough resources is if someone has too many babies, kill the babies. But of course they're not going to do that. Or if you need this, like, why leave people to grow up until adulthood and use all those resources, and then when you kill them, throw away all the resources that they have on them and all the resources. It's like, no, that's not how you do it. I know it's bad to say that, but it's sort of like, even if this is a dystopia, it's kind of too nice. It's sort of like, oh yeah, everyone lives happily, oh, don't break the laws because of traditions, blah, blah, blah. But It never really made sense. It was one of those criticisms that I have. Well, not criticisms. It's one of those points that I think that people miss when they read The Moon is a Harsh Mistress and think, oh, this is great. This is kind of like this libertarian society that can work. It's like, yeah, but didn't you read the start of the book that literally 50% of everyone who's sent to the moon is just thrown out the airlock because there's just not enough resources to go around. So everyone who's even remotely annoying, just thrown out the airlock. 50% of adults sent to the moon are just killed just for turning up. And you go, oh, that's kind of bad. I mean, it's not bad. I mean, it is bad, but in the story, it's not so bad because we reread the story of the people who aren't thrown out the airlock. But when you actually think, oh, the people who are sent to the moon, half of them die on arrival or within a few days of arrival just because, well, we can't spend the resources. We want to have a nicer life. We want to have, you know, nice families and live on these farms. And it's one of these, in this book, it's sort of like, yeah, but it's never really addressed in this book either, that, like, if you're going to kill off people because you need the resources to go around, like, you're not even doing that the right way. It just doesn't even make sense. So I think I've got to the end of my notes here. Yeah. It was too obviously flawed from the start. It's too easy to knock down something, which is, if this is what it is. This is what this book felt like to me. It felt like a character rocked up to a game of Jenga, and like it had already been played all the way through, and it was just teetering on the edge. And the conspiracy people are like just rearranging some of these blocks as they went along. And then Kirit comes along and just pulls a block out from about, not even from the bottom, from about three quarters of the way up. And that kind of sets something off. And then somebody else comes in. I mean, it's not a great analogy, but it's sort of like, that's not, it's sort of like the whole edifice was already crumbling. And why do we tell the story, the boring story of someone who turns up in the last few minutes or the last few seconds and just goes, oh, you're playing Jenga, are you? It's like, no, but that didn't build anything. Like, can we not have been there? Can we not get a story of someone who'd been around a bit longer, who had actually kind of been involved in the game a bit longer? So that's it. One thing, it feels like I've been bagging on this book quite hard, and I have. It's not a great book. It wasn't the story that I wanted. I'm sure that if you are 14 years old and this is your first ever young adult book, and you haven't read the story of the young person who has the best friend next to them, and you can kind of think, oh yeah, in book three, these are gonna be living happily ever after. But then another guy comes in, and you're like, oh, but maybe this is gonna be the person. Which one's gonna be Peter, and which one's gonna be Leo? I can't even remember Hunger Games now. The other guy, the baker, and then the other guy, and which team are you like? Like, if you haven't read those other young adult fantasy science fiction stories, this could be the book for you. But it just isn't. It isn't the book for anyone who's read any stories like that, and anyone who can read any world building expecting great world building. I mean, the front cover of the book says world building is the strength of this book. But like that person said on Goodreads, however, I don't think it quite stands up to scrutiny. It doesn't stand up to scrutiny, and then the story as it is just doesn't hold up. The conspiracies don't hold up, the politics don't hold up. It's not like on a page to page or sentence to sentence or as a, you know, generally reading it, it's not bad. I mean, it's not badly written, but you've got to do more than not badly written when so many of the other pillars of what a story like this could be, what a story set in this dystopian world, even if it's a young adult fantasy story, all of those things have to be there. So I'm going to just quickly answer this phone. What was I just talking about? Oh, I don't want to have to stop it and go back and listen. Okay, so I think I've gone enough about that. Okay book. It's got to do better than that, though. I guess, oh yeah, I was going to talk about the narration, narrated by Christina Havam. Don't know how. Did a perfectly good job of the material that she was given. No problem there at all. Again, if I was to do an Audible ad, go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, and you can go there and get an audiobook for free. But you know, don't listen to this one. Just listen to another better book. And I know that's a weird thing to say. Like, what are the books? Well, I was talking before about The Hunger Games. You could just listen to The Hunger Games. If you've not read it, it's worth reading. And if you want to hear about a very special young lady who is sort of like, oh, in the wrong place at the wrong time, but then becomes whatever, it's sort of like, yeah, just read that. Just read that story. I'm sure there's loads of other young adult books that you can read instead of this. So go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Get a book for free. Help support the SFBIP, and yeah, you get a book. Also, if you sign up for trial, I'm on the platinum thing where I get 2 books per month. And the great thing is, and I mentioned this in the last episode, you don't get 2 books per month, and if you don't like them, whatever. You actually get 2 books that you like. They've got a satisfaction guaranteed plan. So if you read a book, don't like it, or you start a book, you're not digging it, just say, actually, I don't want this book. Let me have another one. Give me my credit back. And no questions asked. They'll give you a credit back, and then you can start another book that you think you're going to enjoy a bit better. Thankfully, this book, Updraft, is short enough that as I started it, even though I wasn't satisfied with it, it's a short enough book that I knew I was going to get through to the end. So there we go. audibletrial.com/SFBRP. And yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. Oh no, actually, let me go over here and see what other people have said about this book on Goodreads. 3.5 overall, and Friends rate it 3.09. So yeah, even all of Goodreads is, you can say, it's around about a 3-star book. I'm gonna give this book, I was thinking 2 stars, but maybe 2.5 stars. It's like I say, it's very average, and in the end, it was just not a bad book. But it just wasn't a book for me. It's a book for 12 to 14-year-olds. Maybe for... Actually, I don't know what the reading age is. But, like, you know, it's sort of like, when was the age that you read Dune for the first time? Okay, it's not that. It's sort of like the age that you read Dune for the first time and understood it and enjoyed it, minus about 3 or 4 years. So I'm going to say this is probably maybe a book for 13, 14-year-olds rather than someone who is going to be 37 this year. Terp Christian rated it 4 stars. Let's see, some others. Richard, 4 stars. Veer rated it 2 stars. Ludo, 2 stars. Nathan, 2 stars. Mark Catalfano rated it 2 stars. So yeah, it's kind of like a 2 to 4 star book. I can't believe anybody is going to give this book 5 stars. Oh yeah, wow, this is interesting, because even the community reviews, where you see other people's reviews, generally they're sort of like a 5-star, a 5-star, a 2-star, a 1-star thing, but here it's like 3 stars, 3 stars, 4 stars, 4 stars, 4 stars, wow, 2 stars, this is really incredible. Normally there's some books which is, oh, well, you've got to scroll all the way down to Seth Dickinson, who says, Updraft is a story about engineering. He gave it 5 stars. But yeah, it's really weird to scroll down and just see lots and lots of 3 and 4 stars and hardly any 5 stars on Goodreads. Because normally the fans of the book will put in the longest, most helpful reviews, and other people who like the book also say, yes, this is helpful. So yeah, definitely not... I don't think it even won the Nebula Award last year, so that's probably what it comes down to. So yeah, that's it. Email me, luke@juggler.net, if you've got any questions. I do reply to every single email that I get. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge on Twitter. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm @LukeBurridge on Instagram. On YouTube, I'm LukeBurridge on YouTube. Follow along with my vlogging there if you want. I talk about juggling and life as a professional juggler and performing and lots of stuff there. I think people would enjoy that too. Yeah, finally, become my friend on Goodreads.com, and so I can see what you think about the books that I read more easily. And go over to the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads and recommend books there in the thread. Books I would like to see reviewed is also good. So that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.